Bactria's troops were. He went to Imalcui, the Arab, who was taking care of Antiochus VI, the young son of King Alexander. Trypho stayed with Imalcui a long time and kept begging him to hand over the young boy. He said, Antiochus should take his father's place as king because Demetrius has let all of his own soldiers go and they hate him for it. Meanwhile, Jonathan sent the following message to Demetrius. Please take your soldiers out of the fortresses around here, especially the one in Jerusalem. They keep attacking us. Demetrius wrote back, Jonathan, of course I will do what you and your people have asked, and I will show great honors to you and your people as soon as I can. For now, please do me a favor and send some troops to help me, because my own soldiers have rebelled. Jonathan sent a heavily armed force of 3,000 soldiers to the city of Antioch, and Demetrius was very glad to see them. Not long after this, a mob of about 120,000 people tried to kill Demetrius. They took over the streets and started rioting. So Demetrius ran away to his palace and ordered the Jewish soldiers to protect him. They came and made sure Demetrius was safe. Then they went through the entire city, killing almost 100,000 people. They not only rescued Demetrius that day, but they also set the city on fire and took everything of value. When the people of Antioch saw that the Jews had taken over their city, they were terrified and begged Demetrius for help. They shouted, "Please make peace with us. Order the Jews to stop attacking us and our city." Demetrius made peace with the people as soon as they had put down their weapons. The Jewish soldiers had earned the respect of everyone in his kingdom, and they returned to Jerusalem with all the things they had captured. Demetrius was now in complete control of his kingdom again, and there was no more trouble. Before long, he forgot how much Jonathan had helped him, and he broke his promises to Jonathan by treating him like an enemy and causing him a lot of trouble. Jonathan and Antiochus become friends. When Trypho came back from his visit to Imalcui the Arab, he brought young Antiochus VI with him, and the boy began to rule as king. The soldiers that King Demetrius II had sent home now sided with Antiochus and Trypho. They attacked Demetrius, forcing him to run for his life. Trypho captured Demetrius's elephants, as well as the city of Antioch. Young King Antiochus wrote a letter to Jonathan, in which he said, I will let you continue as high priest. I have also made you one of my trusted friends and the ruler of the four regions. I am sending you some gold plates and dishes, and I am giving you permission to drink from a gold cup and to wear royal robes and a gold buckle. Your brother Simon is now the ruler of the land from Phoenicia to the Egyptian border. The Wars of Jonathan and Simon. Jonathan left Judea and led his army across the Jordan River. They were going from town to town when the entire Syrian army arrived and offered to help them fight. So Jonathan took his forces to the town of Ascalon, where the people welcomed and honored them. He led his troops to the town of Gaza, but its people refused to let them enter. Then they surrounded the town and took everything of value from the villages nearby. When Jonathan's forces burned down these villages, the people of Gaza begged him not to destroy their town. He agreed, but he sent the sons of Gaza's rulers as hostages to Jerusalem. After this, Jonathan led his army as far as Damascus. Someone told Jonathan, King Demetrius II has sent a large force under the command of royal officers to the town of Kadesh in Galilee. The officers have orders to make you give up your position as high priest. Simon stayed behind in Judea while his brother Jonathan set out to attack the army of Demetrius. Simon attacked the town of Beth-Zur and kept it surrounded for a long time before it surrendered to him. He took command of Beth-Zur and told its people to leave. Then he stationed his own troops there. Meanwhile, Jonathan and his soldiers had set up camp near Lake Galilee, and early one morning he led them to Hazor Valley. Demetrius's army of foreign troops was waiting for them in the valleys. Some of them attacked immediately, while others waited behind some hills ready to make a surprise attack. When the enemy soldiers came out of their hiding places and attacked, almost all the Jewish troops ran away, except two officers by the names of Mattathias and Judas. Jonathan ripped his clothes and put dirt on his head to show his sorrow. Then he prayed and returned to the battle. His army defeated their enemies and made them run for their lives. When the Jewish troops that had deserted saw their enemies trying to escape, they returned and helped chase them as far as the enemy camp at Kadesh. The Jews set up camp there, and Jonathan went back to Jerusalem. About 3,000 foreign soldiers were killed that day. Jonathan makes treaties with Rome and Sparta. Chapter 12. Jonathan realized that this was a good time to make sure the Romans remained on friendly terms with the Jews, so he sent some messengers to Rome. He also wrote letters to the city of Sparta and other places for the same reason. When the messengers arrived in Rome, they met with the Roman senators and said, "Jonathan, the high priest, and the Jewish people have sent us here to renew our friendship with Rome and to make sure that we remain allies." After the meeting, the Romans wrote letters to the other nations where the messengers were going. In these letters they said, "Help these men return safely to Judea." Jonathan himself wrote a letter to the people of Sparta in which he said, "Jonathan, the high priest, the other priests, the Jewish council, and the rest of our people send greetings to our dear friends in Sparta. Some time ago, your king, Arius, sent a letter to Onias, our high priest. Arius said that Jews and Spartans are related, as you can see from the copy of the king's letter we have sent along with this letter. When Onias read this, he welcomed your messenger with honors, because your letter clearly stated that Jews and Spartans should become friends and allies. We Jews don't really need friends and allies, since our scriptures give us hope and strength. But we decided to write you anyway to renew our friendship and to make sure that we are still on good terms. After all, it has been a long time since you wrote us, and we don't want to become like strangers to each other. It is our custom and duty to remember relatives, so during our festivals and other special days, we always think of you as we pray and offer sacrifices. We are very pleased that you have become so famous. We have had plenty of troubles and wars of our own. Even the nearby kings have attacked us. However, there was no reason to bother you or other friends and allies with our problems. God always helps us, and we defeated our enemies and were rescued from them. We have sent Numenius and Antipater as messengers to Rome to make sure that we and the Romans remain on good terms. They also have orders to bring this letter to you with our greetings because we want to be certain that you still consider us your relatives. Please send a reply." Here is a copy of the letter that King Arius wrote to Onias some time ago. King Arius of Sparta sends greetings to Onias the high priest. "We have found a document that says Spartans and Jews are relatives because both nations descended from Abraham. Now that I know this, I want you to write and tell me how you are doing. I am writing to tell you that your livestock, together with everything else you own, belongs to us, and our livestock, together with everything else we own, belongs to you. My messengers have orders to tell you about this." Other Wars of Jonathan and Simon. Jonathan found out that the officers of King Demetrius II were now ready to invade his country with a more powerful army than before. Jonathan did not want the king's army to invade Jerusalem, so he led his troops to the region around Hamath, where he saw the enemy camp. Jonathan sent out spies who came back and reported, "The king's army is getting ready to attack us tonight." At sunset, Jonathan stationed some of his troops on lookout duty around the camp, and he told the others, "Stay awake and be ready to fight at any time." But the king's troops lost their nerve and were frightened when someone informed them that the Jews were ready for their attack, so they lit campfires and ran away. The campfires burned all night, and the Jews did not find out until morning that the enemy had left. Jonathan sent troops after them, but the king's army had already crossed the Eleutherus River. There was a tribe of Arabs named the Zabadeans, and Jonathan ordered his troops to destroy them. The troops took everything of value. Then Jonathan led them all the way to Damascus. Meanwhile, Simon took his soldiers as far as Ascalon and the nearby fortresses. Someone told him, "The town of Joppa is about to join Demetrius." Simon made a surprise attack on Joppa. He captured the town and stationed some of his troops there to guard it. Jerusalem is made stronger. Jonathan returned to Jerusalem and met with the Jewish leaders. They decided to build fortresses in Judea and to make Jerusalem's walls even higher. They also agreed to construct a strong high wall between the enemy fortress and the rest of the city in order to separate the fortress from the city and to keep enemy soldiers from going in and out for supplies. Everyone worked together to rebuild Jerusalem. They repaired part of the collapsed eastern wall and the section of the city called Caponatha. Meanwhile, Simon and his workers rebuilt the town of Adida at the edge of the hill country, and they put a wall around it with strong gates. Trypho captures Jonathan. Trypho wanted to be king of Asia, and he began plotting against King Antiochus VI. But Trypho was afraid Jonathan would go to war to protect Antiochus, so he decided to do away with Jonathan, and he led his army to the town of Beth-shan. Jonathan and 40,000 of his best soldiers left Jerusalem to attack Trypho at Beth-shan. When Trypho saw the large army, he was too frightened to fight. Instead, he brought Jonathan to his camp and gave him honors and gifts. Trypho bragged about Jonathan to all his trusted friends and troops and said, "Obey Jonathan's orders just as you obey mine." Trypho told Jonathan, "We're not at war. Why have you caused these people so much trouble? I've come here to give you the city of Ptolemais and the other fortresses and to put you in charge of all the officers and troops. After I've done this, I'll go home. Choose a few troops to go with you and me to Ptolemais, then send the others back to Judea." Jonathan believed Trypho and sent all but 3,000 of his soldiers back to Judea. 2,000 of them stayed behind in Galilee, while 1,000 went with Jonathan to Ptolemais. But as soon as he entered the city, its gates were closed. Then he was captured, and his soldiers were killed. Trypho's troops and cavalry went to the great valley in Galilee to kill the rest of Jonathan's soldiers. However, when Jonathan's troops heard what had happened to him and the others, they encouraged each other and marched away ready to fight. Trypho's soldiers and cavalry caught up with them, but they turned back when they realized that the Jews would fight for their lives. After the Jewish soldiers from Galilee returned safely to Judea, the whole nation mourned for Jonathan and his troops. Everyone was terrified, because the Gentiles around there were saying, "The Jews have no ruler or general. Let's destroy them and make the world forget they ever lived." Simon is chosen leader. Chapter 13. Trypho got together a large army to invade Judea and destroy it. The Jews were terrified when they heard what he was up to, but Simon went to Jerusalem, where he called the people together and encouraged everyone by saying, "You know the wonderful things my family has done for the law of Moses and our temple. You've heard how my brothers and I suffered in the wars and how they died fighting for our people. I'm the only one in my family left alive. But in these troubled times, I'm ready to die for our people, just as my brothers did. I want to get even with the other nations. They hate us and have come together to destroy our people, our temple, and our families." Simon's speech encouraged everyone, and they shouted, "Be our leader just like your brothers Judas and Jonathan. Take command of our army, and we will obey your orders." Simon called the troops together, and they worked quickly to finish the walls and towers that protected Jerusalem on every side. Simon ordered Jonathan, the son of Absalom, to take a large force of soldiers to the town of Joppa. Jonathan forced the people to leave, and he took over Joppa. Trypho tricks Simon. Trypho was still holding Simon's brother Jonathan as a hostage, and he brought Jonathan along when he led his large army out of Ptolemais to invade Judea. Someone told Trypho, Simon is now leader of the Jews, and he's ready to attack. Then Trypho sent a message to Simon, whose camp was at Adida, overlooking the valleys. The message said, "Your brother Jonathan was a royal official, but he owed money to the king, and so I arrested him. I'll set him free as soon as you send me 100,000 pieces of silver and 2 of his sons as hostages. That way he won't rebel against me any more." Simon knew the messengers were lying, but he sent for the money and Jonathan's sons. He knew if he did not, the Jewish people would hate him and say, if Simon had given Trypho what he wanted, Jonathan would still be alive. Simon sent Jonathan's sons and the money to Trypho. However, Trypho broke his promise and did not release Jonathan. Trypho and his soldiers now set out to invade and destroy the country. They marched south and came up on the road from Adora. But each time Trypho tried to cross the border, he was blocked by Simon and his forces. Meanwhile, the enemy troops in the fortress at Jerusalem kept sending messages to Trypho, begging him to go around by way of the desert and bring them food. Finally, Trypho ordered his cavalry to get ready to leave for Jerusalem. But that night, Trypho was stopped by a heavy snowstorm, and he took his army to the country of Gilead. When he reached the town of Bascama, he had Jonathan killed and buried. Then he returned to his own country. A burial place for the Maccabees. Simon had the body of his brother Jonathan taken back to Modin, the town of his ancestors. He buried him there, and everyone in Israel cried and mourned for a long time. Simon had a tall stone monument built over his family grave. It was shiny on the front and back, and could be seen a long way off. He also built a row of 7 pyramids to honor his father, his mother, and his 4 brothers. He set up tall stone columns around the pyramids. Then he hung suits of armor on these columns so that everyone would remember what his family had done. Next to the suits of armor, he put carved figures of ships that could be seen by anyone passing by on the sea. This family burial place is a work of art, and even today it can be seen in Modin. Simon and Demetrius II make peace. Antiochus VI was still a young boy when Trypho had him murdered. Now Trypho was ruler and made everyone miserable. During this time, Simon ordered the Jews to build thick walls, high towers, and strong gates for the fortresses in Judea and to supply them with plenty of food. Simon sent messengers to King Demetrius II, and they begged him, "Please make things easier for our country. Trypho is robbing us of everything." Demetrius II makes Judea a free country. Demetrius II did what Simon wanted and wrote him the following letter. King Demetrius sends greetings to the Jewish people and their leaders, including Simon, who is high priest and a trusted friend of the king. Thank you for the gold crown and the gold palm branch you sent me. I am ready to make a lasting peace by ordering my officials to stop collecting taxes from you. I will give you everything I have promised in our treaties. Besides that, you can keep the fortresses you have just built. I forgive everything you have done wrong in the past. And from now on, I won't collect the special royal tax or any of the other taxes I used to receive from Jerusalem. I will hire any of your people who are prepared to help me in my kingdom. Let's give peace a chance. So, in the year 170 of the Syrian kingdom, the Jews won their freedom from the Gentiles, and on their documents and contracts they wrote, "The first year of Simon, the great high priest and the commander and ruler of the Jews." Simon captures the town of Gezerah. About this time, Simon and the Jewish forces surrounded the town of Gezerah and set up a large weapon to break through the wall. They pushed it up to the town wall, where they broke through and captured one of the towers. Then the soldiers who were operating the weapon rushed into Gezerah, causing a terrible uproar. Everyone in Gezerah tore their clothes to show their sorrow. They climbed to the top of the town wall, where they shouted to Simon and begged him for peace, saying, "We've done wrong and deserve to be punished, but please have mercy on us." Simon agreed to stop the fighting, but he ordered everyone to leave the town, and he took the idols out of the houses where they were kept. Then he and his troops entered Gezerah, singing hymns of praise. Simon removed everything that made the town unclean, according to their religion, and he made the fortresses of Gezerah stronger. He built a house for himself, and let faithful Jews live in the town. Simon captures the fortress in Jerusalem. The enemy troops in the Jerusalem fortress still could not go into the country to buy food, and many of them starved to death. Finally, the survivors begged Simon for peace. He agreed, then ordered them to leave the fortress so he could remove everything that made it unclean according to their religion. On the 23rd day of the second month in the year 171 of the Syrian kingdom, Simon led his soldiers into the fortress. They carried palm branches and praised God with all kinds of songs and musical instruments. God had completely crushed their powerful enemy. Simon decided that a joyous festival should be held on this same day every year. He strengthened the wall on the side of the temple hill that faced the fortress. Then he and his troops made the fortress their headquarters. John, the son of Simon, was now a grown man, so Simon put him in command of the whole army, and John lived in the town of Gezerah. Demetrius II is taken prisoner. Chapter 14. In the year 172 of the Syrian kingdom, King Demetrius II led an army to the country of Media, where he hoped to hire soldiers to help him fight Trypho. When King Arsaces of Persia and Media learned that Demetrius had invaded his country, he sent one of his generals to capture him alive. This general defeated the army of Demetrius and took Demetrius to King Arsaces, who put him in prison. In praise of Simon. The country was at peace while Simon ruled because he worked for the good of the nation. Everyone was glad that he ruled, and they honored him for as long as he lived. Simon became a true hero by capturing the seaport of Joppa. Now ships can sail to faraway islands. Simon made the country larger and ruled the entire region. He took many prisoners and also captured the towns of Gezerah and Beth-Zur. And when he took control of the Jerusalem fortress, he removed all the idols that had made it unclean. No one could oppose him. Life was peaceful on the farms. The earth produced grain, and fruit grew on the trees. In towns, the old folks talked about the good things that had happened while young soldiers strolled by in their fancy uniforms. Simon supplied the towns with food and protection, and was famous everywhere. He brought peace and great joy to Israel. Everyone rested, unafraid, beneath their own grapevines and fig trees. Troublemakers and enemy kings had been crushed. Simon helped the poor and obeyed the law of God by destroying outlaws and rebellious people. He gave gifts to the temple and made it more glorious. Simon makes a treaty with Rome and Sparta. Cities as far away as Rome and Sparta mourned at the news of Jonathan's death, but they were pleased that Jonathan's brother Simon had taken his place as high priest and ruler of Judea. The Romans and Spartans wanted Simon to be their friend and ally, just as his brothers had been, so they wrote him letters on sheets of bronze. The Jews then read these letters during a meeting in Jerusalem. The letter from the Spartans said, "The city of Sparta and its leaders send greetings to Simon the high priest, to the other leaders and priests, and to our relatives, the Jews. Your messengers made us very happy when they told us how famous you are. The details of their visit are in our record books, which say, 'The Jews sent Numenius and Antipater to us as messengers to make sure that we were on friendly terms. We Spartans gladly welcomed these men and honored them. Moreover, we placed a copy of their message in the public building where all our record books are kept. We have also sent a copy to Simon the high priest telling what we have done.' After the Jews had finished their meeting, Simon sent Numenius to Rome to make certain that the Romans were still their allies. Numenius took them a heavy gold shield that weighed almost 1,000 pounds. When the people found out what Simon was doing, they said, 'How can we repay Simon and his descendants? He and his brothers and the rest of his father's family have been strong. They have defeated our enemies and set us free." The people wrote on sheets of bronze the things Simon had done. Then they fastened the sheets to stone columns on Mount Zion. This is what they wrote. After Simon, the great high priest, had ruled for 3 years in a Saramal, our priests, rulers, and leaders held an important meeting on the 18th day of the month of Elul in the year 172 of the Syrian kingdom. This is what we were told. Simon, the son of Mattathias, was a priest from Joarib's family. He and his brothers risked their lives and fought back whenever our enemies attacked us. They protected our temple and the law of Moses, and they made us famous. Simon's brother Jonathan united our people, and we chose him to be our high priest. But after he died, our enemies prepared to invade Judea because they wanted to attack our temple and destroy the country. Simon took command of our army. He spent a lot of his own money to pay our soldiers and to buy weapons and armor for us. He put up strong walls and towers in the towns of Judea, as well as in the border town of Beth-Zur, where the enemy used to store weapons. Then he stationed Jewish soldiers at Beth-Zur. Simon built a fortress in the coastal town of Joppa, as well as in the town of Gezerah, because it was close to Azotus, which had been a stronghold for our enemies. Simon settled Jews in Gezerah, and he gave everyone in these towns whatever they needed to make the towns fit to live in. Simon was a dependable man who had high hopes for our country and did all he could to make our nation glorious, so we chose him to be our ruler and high priest. The Gentiles had built a fortress in Jerusalem and had stationed some soldiers there who then attacked the rest of us and made the temple and everything else unclean. But Simon successfully forced the Gentiles out of Judea. He got rid of the troops in the fortress and was in full control of everything. Simon strengthened the walls of the Jerusalem fortress and stationed soldiers there to guard the country and city. He also made the walls around Jerusalem higher. Simon did everything well, so King Demetrius accepted him as our high priest. Demetrius called Simon his trusted friend and gave him many other honors. He did this because he knew that the Romans had welcomed Simon's messengers and considered Jews their friends, allies, and relatives. Our people and priests gladly chose Simon and his descendants to be our rulers and high priests forever, or until God sends a true prophet. Simon will rule over us and care for our temple, our country, our weapons, and our fortresses. Everyone must obey his orders and write his name on all official documents in Judea. Simon has permission to wear purple clothes and gold jewelry, just like a king. Our people and our priests must never change any of these orders. They must obey Simon and never hold meetings in the country without first asking him. And none of them may wear purple clothes and a gold buckle as though they were kings. Anyone who disobeys or rejects these orders will be punished. The people agreed with these decisions that Simon should be high priest, commander, and ruler of the nation and its priests. Simon was glad to do all this, and he promised to protect them. The agreement was written on sheets of bronze, then put in the temple for everyone to see. Copies were also stored in the treasury for Simon and his family. Antiochus writes to Simon. Chapter 15. Antiochus the Seventh, the son of Demetrius the Second, sent a letter from the Greek islands to the Jews and to Simon the high priest and ruler. It said, "King Antiochus sends greetings to the Jewish people and to Simon, their high priest and ruler. Some rebels have taken control of my ancestors' kingdom. I want it back so I can make it a great kingdom again. I have hired a large army and navy, and I am ready to land on the coast. I am going to punish everyone who has destroyed my country and ruined so many of its towns. I will follow the example of other kings and excuse you from paying some taxes and fees. I will let you make your own coins and allow you to keep all of the weapons and fortresses you have built. As of today, I will remove all soldiers from Jerusalem and its temple, and you won't be required to repay money you owe the king. As soon as I get my kingdom back, I will make you and your temple prosperous and famous. Then the whole world will know how outstanding you are. Antiochus VII attacks Trypho. In the year 174 of the Syrian kingdom, Antiochus VII invaded the land of his ancestors. Soon, most of Trypho's soldiers deserted and joined the army of Antiochus, leaving Trypho with only a few soldiers. He retreated to the town of Dor on the coast, and Antiochus got ready to attack him there. Trypho was in real trouble now, because he did not have enough troops to fight back. Antiochus led 120,000 soldiers and 8,000 cavalry to Dor and surrounded the town. At the same time, his ships attacked from the sea, and the people of Dor were trapped. A letter to Ptolemy VIII. Meanwhile, Numenius and the other messengers returned to Jerusalem from Rome with letters to different countries and rulers. One of the letters said, "Lucius, a Roman official, sends greetings to King Ptolemy of Egypt. Simon, the high priest, and the Jewish people have sent messengers to Rome to make sure that Jews and Romans are still friends and allies. These messengers brought us a gold shield that weighs almost 1,000 pounds. We are keeping this gift and writing letters to countries and kings, warning them not to cause any trouble for the Jews. Please don't attack the towns or country of the Jews, or help any enemies who do. If troublemakers escape from their country and come to you, they must be sent back to Simon the high priest, who will punish them according to the law of Moses." A letter to other rulers. Lucius sent the same letter to King Demetrius and to Attalus, Ariarathes, and Arsaces. It went to every country, including Samsumes and Sparta, and it went to Caria, Pamphylia, and Lycia, as well as to the islands of Delos, Samos, Rhodes, Kos, Aradus, and Cyprus, and to the cities of Myndos, Sicyon, Halicarnassus, Cnidus, Cortina, Cyrene, Phacelis, and Side. Simon the high priest also received a copy of the letter. Antiochus VII quarrels with Simon. Antiochus VII made a second attack against the town of Dor. His soldiers set up weapons for breaking through the wall. They fought long and hard and kept Trypho from leaving. Simon wanted to help Antiochus, so he sent him 2,000 of his best soldiers, together with silver and gold and many supplies. Antiochus not only refused Simon's help, but he turned against him and broke every promise he had ever made. Antiochus told his trusted friend Athenobius to meet with Simon and tell him, "The towns of Joppa and Gezera and the fortress in Jerusalem are now under your control, but these places, along with others you have taken, belong to me, the king. You have ruined the land around these towns and done a lot of other damage to my kingdom. Simon, give back these towns and return the tax money from the places you captured outside of Judea. If you don't want to do this, then pay 500,000 pieces of silver for damaging the towns you captured, and turn over to me 500,000 more to make up for the tax money you took from the towns. If you don't do this, it's war." When Athenobius arrived in Jerusalem, he could not take his eyes off Simon's great wealth. Simon had a table with dishes made of gold and silver, and he owned many other valuable things. Then Athenobius told Simon what the king had said. Simon answered, "Our ancestors gave us this land and property. Later, our enemies stole it from us. So how can you say we have taken things that belong to others? We intend to keep our land and property now that we have them back once again. The towns of Joppa and Gezera that you want have been a constant bother to us, and we will pay you 100,000 pieces of silver for them." Athenobius was so furious that he could not speak. He returned to Antiochus and told him what Simon had said. He also let him know about Simon's great wealth and everything else he had seen. This report made Antiochus very angry. King Antiochus appoints Cendebeus. Meanwhile, Trypho had escaped by ship from Dor and sailed to the town of Orthosia. Antiochus went after him, but left Cendobius in command of the coastland. He gave him soldiers and cavalry and said, "Get ready to invade Judea and attack the Jews. Make the fortress at Kedron even stronger." Cendobius led his army to Jamnia and started causing trouble in the town. He invaded Judea and killed everyone he captured. After he made the fortress at Kedron stronger, he stationed some soldiers and cavalry there. Then he told them, "The king has ordered us to patrol the roads in Judea." John attacks Cendobius. Chapter 16. Simon's son John went from Gazara at the time and told his father what Cendobius had done. Then Simon met with John and Judas, his two oldest sons, and said to them, "My brothers and I, and everyone else in my father's family, have fought for our people ever since we were young. God blessed us when we fought, and we rescued Israel many times. I am an old man now, but God has shown kindness by letting you become mature enough to lead our people in battle, just as my brothers and I have done. I pray that God will be with you as you fight." John immediately left to attack Cendobius with 20,000 foot soldiers and cavalry from Judea. That night the troops made camp at Modin. Then, early the next morning, they went out to the valley and stopped beside a flooding stream. On the other side of it, a large number of soldiers and cavalry were moving toward them. John lined up his troops for battle. He waded into the stream first because he knew his soldiers were afraid of the water. They watched John, then followed him across. John noticed that Cendobius had a lot of cavalry, so John divided his men into groups and ordered them to take up positions around their own cavalry. Then they blew war trumpets and attacked Cendobius. His forces ran away, and many of his troops died in the battle. Those who escaped ran back into their fortress. During the battle, John's brother Judas was wounded, but John and his troops chased the enemy soldiers. Some of them ran as far as Kedron, the town that Cendobius had rebuilt. Others reached the towers in the open country near the town of Azotus. But John burned the town and killed about 2,000 enemy troops. After this, he led his army safely back to Judea. The death of Simon. Ptolemy, the son of Abubus, was in command of the valley near Jericho. He was a rich man and was married to the daughter of Simon the high priest. But Ptolemy was very proud and thought he deserved to be the ruler, so he began plotting to kill Simon and his sons. In the year 177 of the Syrian kingdom, Simon was going from town to town in Judea trying to help the people. Later that year, during the month of Shabbat, he and his sons Mattathias and Judas arrived in Jericho. Ptolemy pretended he was glad to see Simon and his sons. Then he invited them to a banquet in their honor at a small fortress that he had built and named Doc. Some of Ptolemy's soldiers were hiding near the dining room. As soon as Simon and his sons were drunk, the soldiers rushed out of their hiding places with swords in their hands. They attacked Simon, his two sons, and some of their servants, killing them all. So Ptolemy betrayed a friend and proved that he could not be trusted. John becomes the leader of Israel. Ptolemy wrote and told King Antiochus that he had killed Simon. He asked the king to give him soldiers and to put him in command of Judea and its towns. Ptolemy also wrote letters to the Jewish army commanders, promising them silver and gold and other gifts if they would help him. Some of Ptolemy's troops set out to take over Jerusalem and the Temple Hill, while others went to murder John in Gezerah. But someone warned John, "Ptolemy has already murdered your father and brothers, and now he has sent soldiers to kill you." John was shocked by this news. He found out which soldiers had come to kill him, and he had them arrested and put to death. Everything else that John the high priest did is found in his priestly record books that tell about his wars, his victories, and how he rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. John began keeping records as soon as he had taken his father's place as high priest.
This ends 1 Maccabees. And now, Second Maccabees.
Second Maccabees. About this book. Second Maccabees is a condensed book. The author took a 5-volume history by Jason of Cyrene and shortened it into 1 volume. This material begins in chapter 3, and, like First Maccabees, it tells the story of how the Jews rebelled against the Greek kings that had ruled Palestine since the time of Alexander the Great. However, Second Maccabees begins the story about 10 years earlier than First Maccabees and ends it before the death of Judas Maccabeus in 160 BC. Second Maccabees teaches that God punishes those who do evil, including his own people. But if they turn back to him, he will rescue them and give them victory. The book also shows the importance of worshiping the Lord in the proper way at the Jerusalem temple, and that the Lord's people could depend on him to protect his temple. A Letter to the Jews in Egypt. Chapter 1. The Jews of Jerusalem and Judea wrote a letter to their Jewish relatives in Egypt. It said, "Greetings and lasting peace. We pray that God will be kind to you, and remember the promise that he made to his faithful servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. May God make you willing and eager to worship and obey him with all your heart. May he bless you with peace and with an understanding of his law and its commands. We ask him to answer your prayers and to forgive your sins and never turn from you in times of trouble. All of us here are now praying for you." In the year 169 of the Syrian kingdom, when Demetrius was our ruler, we wrote you a letter in which we said, "We have had terrible troubles ever since Jason the high priest and his troops rebelled against our country and its leaders. They destroyed the temple gate and killed innocent people. But we begged the Lord for help, and when he answered our prayers, we brought sacrifices and offerings of grain into the temple. We lit the lamps and put the sacred loaves of bread on the table. And so we now urge you to celebrate, in the month of Kislev, a festival like the Festival of Shelters. We are writing to you in the year 188 of the Greek kingdom." Another letter to the Jews in Egypt. The Jews of Jerusalem and Judea had also written an earlier letter. It said, "The Jews of Jerusalem and Judea, together with Judas and the council, send greetings to Aristobulus and the rest of our Jewish friends in Egypt. Aristobulus belongs to the family of chosen priests, and he is King Ptolemy's teacher. We wish Aristobulus and all the rest of you good health. We thank God because he has rescued us from King Antiochus, who put us in dreadful danger. The king's troops attacked our holy city of Jerusalem, but God forced him to retreat. Antiochus then invaded Persia with an army that seemed too powerful for anyone to defeat. He and his trusted friends went into the temple of the goddess Nanea, where Antiochus lied and said he planned to marry her. But all he really wanted were the temple treasures that he would receive as wedding gifts. The priests of the temple made a clever plan to kill Antiochus. They set out the treasures. And when Antiochus and a few of his friends entered the temple, the priests immediately locked the doors behind him. Then they killed him and his friends by dropping heavy stones on them from a trapdoor in the roof. Afterwards, the priests chopped the dead bodies into pieces and tossed the heads to the people outside. Let's always praise our God for punishing these wicked enemies." Nehemiah gets fire for a sacrifice. The letter continues. "On the 25th day of the month of Kislev, we will celebrate the temple festival. We think you need to know this, so you can celebrate it just as you celebrate the Festival of Shelters and the Festival of Fire. This Festival of Fire goes back to Nehemiah, who rebuilt the temple and its altar, then offered sacrifices. All this happened long ago when our ancestors were dragged away to Persia, and some faithful priests took fire from the altar. They secretly hid the fire at the bottom of a dry cistern, and they hid it so well that no one ever found it. Many years later, when it pleased God, the Persian king sent Nehemiah back to Jerusalem. Nehemiah then told some descendants of those priests to find the hidden fire, but after returning, they told us, "There is nothing in the cistern except an oily liquid." Nehemiah told them to dip out some of the liquid and bring it to him. Then, after the sacrifice was ready, Nehemiah ordered the priests to sprinkle the liquid over the offerings and the firewood, and they did. A little while later, the sun came out from behind the clouds. Then the firewood and offerings suddenly burst into flames as everyone stared in amazement. Jonathan prays. The letter continues. While the offerings were being burned, a priest named Jonathan began praying. Nehemiah, the other priests, and the rest of the people also joined in the prayer that went something like this. Our Lord and our God, you created everything. You are powerful and fearsome, but faithful and merciful. You alone are kind, and only you are king. No one else is fair and gives us everything we need. No one else is all-powerful and lives forever. Long ago you chose our ancestors to be your holy people, and since then you have rescued our nation from every danger. Please accept our sacrifice that we are offering for everyone in Israel, your chosen nation. Protect us from danger and make us holy. Bring home our scattered people and free those Jews who are slaves in foreign nations. We are hated and mistreated, so have pity on us and show Gentiles that you are the God of Israel. Take revenge against our arrogant enemies who attack and insult us. Then give your nation a lasting home in your holy land, just as Moses said you would. The king of Persia learns about the fire. The letter continues. When everyone had finished praying, the priests started singing hymns. Soon the fire burned up the offerings. Then Nehemiah ordered the rest of the liquid to be poured over some large rocks. As soon as this was done, the rocks started burning, but flames from the altar put out the fire. People everywhere heard what had happened. Even the Persian king learned that an oily liquid had been discovered in the place where the priests had hidden the altar fire just before they were dragged away to Persia. The king was also told that Nehemiah and his followers had offered a sacrifice using the liquid to start their fire. After the king had carefully checked on this story, he surrounded the cistern with a high wall and built a shrine there. Then the king exchanged gifts with the people he liked. Nehemiah and his followers called the oil nephthar, which means cleaning, but everyone else calls it naphtha. A story about Jeremiah. The letter continues. Chapter 2. One of our writings says that it was Jeremiah the prophet who ordered our people to hide some of the altar fire before we were forced to go to Persia, just as I have already told you. We also know from this writing that Jeremiah taught these Jews the law of the Lord. He warned them never to forget the Lord's commands after they arrived in Persia, and he also begged our people not to be tricked into worshipping idols, even the ones decorated with gold and silver. He said many similar things while urging them to always think about the teachings of the law. This same writing tells us that Jeremiah had a vision in which he was ordered to take the sacred tent and the sacred chest to the mountain that Moses had climbed to look at the land God had promised us. After Jeremiah came to the mountain, he found a big cave where he hid the tent, the chest, and the altar for burning incense. Then he blocked the entrance to the cave. Meanwhile, a few of our people had followed Jeremiah, hoping to mark the path to the cave, but they could not. Jeremiah got angry with them when he discovered what they had tried to do, and he said, "No one can know about the cave until the Lord God has pity on us again and brings our people back home. At that time he will show where these things are hidden. A cloud will appear, blazing with God's own dazzling light, just as it did when he came to Moses. This is also how the Lord came to King Solomon. When Solomon asked him to make the holy temple glorious and acceptable as a place for worship." Solomon and Moses. The letter continues. We also know that Solomon was wise and built our temple, then offered a sacrifice to make it completely acceptable. When Solomon prayed, some fire came down from heaven and burned up his sacrifices. This is the same thing that happened when Moses prayed. I am offering a sacrifice for sin, so it must be completely burned and none of it eaten. Solomon's festival lasted for 8 days. Nehemiah builds a library. The letter continues. You will find all this information in our record books as well as in the writings of Nehemiah, who built a library and filled it with the writings about prophets and kings. The books of King David and the letters that the kings wrote about offerings are also in his library. Judas Maccabeus collected all the books that we had lost track of during the war, and we still have them here. Send someone after these books if you ever need them. Celebrating a festival. The letter concludes. We are ready to celebrate the temple festival, and so we are writing to say that you should celebrate it as well. God has rescued his nation and returned our sacred land that we inherited from our ancestors. God has also given us back our kingdom, our priests, and our sacred way of life, just as he promised in the law of Moses. He has saved us from dreadful danger and made our temple holy again. Because of this, we will always trust in the kindness of God, who will bring us back home from every nation on earth and lead us to his holy temple. The Five Books of Jason. Jason of Cyrene wrote 5 books about Judas Maccabeus and his brothers, in which he told how they made our great temple an acceptable place of worship once again, and how they dedicated its altar. He also told us about the wars they fought against Antiochus Epiphanes and his son Eupator. Jason described some visions these brave warriors were given from heaven as they defended our Jewish way of life. He also explained how our small army made raids across the whole country, forcing the cruel barbarians to run for their lives. And because of the Lord's kindness and mercy, our troops recaptured our world-famous temple. They also freed Jerusalem and put back into effect the laws that those barbarians had hoped to wipe out. I will now try to summarize Jason's books in one volume. They are so full of facts and details that they discourage readers who want to learn about these events. My shorter version will please everyone. People who read for pleasure will enjoy it, and those who like to memorize things will find it easy to remember. Writing a short version of a long book is like trying to prepare a banquet for a crowd of people with different tastes. So I worked night and day and lost a lot of sleep, but that's all right because I am glad to work hard in order to satisfy my readers. My story is merely a summary of the main events included in Jason's account. He was like a builder who had to know every detail about the new house he was constructing. I am simply a decorator whose only job is to make things look beautiful. Historians learn as much as possible about their subjects, then present every side of a story without leaving out a thing. But writers who summarize books are allowed to be brief and to leave out many of the details. Enough said is enough said. Now is the time to begin the story itself. How foolish it would be to write such a long introduction that I would have to leave out part of the history. Heliodorus in Jerusalem. Chapter 3. When Onias was high priest of the nation, the holy city of Jerusalem always had peace. Onias hated evil and loved God, which made everyone careful to obey the law. Many kings showed great respect for the temple in those days, and even brought it expensive gifts. For example, King Seleucus of Asia used to pay for the daily sacrifices with money from the taxes he collected. While Onias was still high priest, a man named Simon, from the Benjamin tribe, was a high official in the temple, and one day he started arguing with Onias about how to run the Jerusalem marketplace. Simon lost the argument and went to Apollonius, the governor of southwest Syria province, and said, there is more money in the temple treasury than can be counted. And since the money is not used to pay for sacrifices, it may as well be placed under the authority of the king. Apollonius told King Seleucus about the money in the temple, and the king ordered Heliodorus, his highest official, to bring it to him. So Heliodorus left at once for Jerusalem. But he told everyone that he was on his way to inspect the towns of southwest Syria province. Onias the high priest warmly welcomed Heliodorus to Jerusalem. Then Heliodorus explained, "I came to the city because someone told me there is a lot of money in your temple treasury. Is this true?" Onias answered, "There is money in the treasury, but some of it is for widows and orphans, and some of it belongs to Hyrcanus, a very important man. At the most you will find only 400,000 silver coins and 200,000 pieces of gold. That devil Simon lied to you. Anyway, I can't possibly let you rob our people of their silver and gold. They trust this sacred temple and think their money is safe. After all, everyone in the world respects this holy place." Heliodorus answered, "King Seleucus has ordered me to collect the money for the royal treasury, and I'm going to do just that." Heliodorus causes an uproar in Jerusalem. After Heliodorus had set a day to collect the money, he went into the temple to take charge of the workers who were counting the silver and gold. Meanwhile, everyone in Jerusalem was in terrible agony. The priests in their sacred robes were lying face down on the ground in front of the altar and praying, "Our God, please protect the silver and gold. You yourself made the law that keeps our money safe while it is stored in the temple." It was heartbreaking just to look at Onias the high priest. His face was pale because of his suffering, and his trembling body showed that he was terrified and tormented. Heliodorus was about to disgrace the temple, and so families ran out of their houses and huddled together in the streets to pray. Grown women put on sackcloth skirts. Young women who had never been allowed outdoors ran to the city gates or to the city wall or just stared out of their windows. Everyone raised their hands toward heaven, begging God for help. It was a dreadful sight to see the high priest in such anguish and agony and the people lying face down on the ground. God punishes Heliodorus. Everyone kept begging the Lord All-Powerful to protect the money that had been left in the temple. Meanwhile, Heliodorus and his guards walked right into the treasury just as they had planned. But God is more powerful than all spirits and authorities, and he sent such a horrible vision that it terrified Heliodorus and his arrogant followers, leaving them weak from fear. In the vision, they saw a gruesome rider with gold weapons and gold armor. The rider's horse wore a fancy harness and charged furiously at Heliodorus, kicking at him with its hoofs. Two very strong and handsome young men in fine clothes suddenly appeared. One stood on each side of Heliodorus and beat him severely with whips until he fainted and fell to the ground. Then his guards picked him up and placed him on a mat. Only a short time before this happened, Heliodorus had led a crowd of followers and guards into the treasury. Now they had to carry this helpless man away, and everyone clearly saw the power of God. After Heliodorus had seen and felt God's mighty strength, he lay speechless and near death. But everyone else praised the Lord God All-Powerful because of the miracle that had kept the temple safe. A little while earlier, the temple was filled with fear and confusion. But now there was joy and happiness because the Lord had appeared. Heliodorus tells everyone about God. Heliodorus was at the point of death, and a few of his friends quickly begged Onias to ask God Most High to let him live. Onias did not want King Seleucus to think that the Jews had plotted to kill Heliodorus, and so he offered a sacrifice and asked God to make Heliodorus well. While Onias was offering the sacrifice, the two young men appeared to Heliodorus again. They were still dressed in their fine clothes, and they said, "Heliodorus, you should be grateful for Onias. It was because of him that the Lord did not take your life. God in heaven was the one who punished you. Now you must tell everyone how powerful God is." After saying this, the young men disappeared. Heliodorus offered his own sacrifice, then made a lot of promises to the Lord who had saved his life. He said goodbye to Onias and led his soldiers back to King Seleucus. He told everyone, "With my own eyes I have seen God Most High work miracles." One day, Seleucus asked Heliodorus, "Who should I send to Jerusalem this time?" Heliodorus answered, "Send someone you don't like or an enemy of your government. Whoever you send will be killed or badly beaten, because God's power surrounds the Jerusalem temple. This God lives in heaven, but he guards that place and kills everyone who tries to harm it." So God kept Heliodorus from robbing the temple treasury. Simon plots against Onias. Chapter 4. I have already told you that Simon caused a lot of trouble for our country by telling Apollonius about the money in the temple. Then later Simon lied and blamed Onias for the attack on Heliodorus and for all the terrible things that happened. Simon even dared to claim that Onias was plotting against the government, although everyone knew that Onias had been generous to Jerusalem and that he had protected our nation and had been in favor of its laws. Simon hated Onias so much that he had even hired some men to commit murders. Apollonius, the governor of southwest Syria province, started encouraging Simon with his evil plans. Finally, Onias understood that his life was in danger, and he asked King Seleucus for help. Onias did not want to bring charges against other Jews. He only hoped to find ways of privately and publicly doing good for the entire nation. But he knew that he needed the king's help to bring peace to the country and to bring Simon to his senses. Jason becomes high priest. After the death of King Seleucus,